This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:17 in the morning, you're with The Morning Run. Shazana Chuang and Chen Li here. But in the meantime, we are looking at the issue of climate change. Scientists have given a final warning to governments that it's now or never to act on climate change if they want to stave off the worst effects of the phenomenon. The UN Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or the IPCC, released its final installment of its sixth assessment report this week, focusing on mitigation efforts.
The IPCC says that there must be rapid, deep and immediate cuts in carbon emissions to keep the rise in temperatures at or under 1.5 degrees Celsius this century. According to the IPCC, carbon emissions must peak by 2025 and decrease to net zero by the middle of this century, which is around 2050. So how much political will is there to push these ambitious targets through in the face of geopolitical, economic and social pressures?
To help break down the findings of the report, we speak to Darshan Joshi, analyst at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies, or ISIS, Malaysia. Darshan, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Now, the latest IPCC report is the third installment of a sixth assessment report that was released over the course of 9 months. What are the overarching messages coming from the full report?
Like you say, this particular report is part of the sixth assessment. This report is on mitigation, and mitigation is really the prevention of climate change. So this report consists of a review of where we are at in terms of mitigation based on all of our pledges and all of our efforts, and what it's going to take moving forward to continue combating it to the extent that we need. And in many ways, this report really almost makes things worse. Because you see, these IPCC reports, they basically build on the previous one. You know, as we uncover more, as we learn more about climate change and develop a clearer understanding of the impacts and the timeline of the impacts. And that's what this report really tells us. First of all, the first major takeaway is that we have less time than we think. This report calls for us to peak emissions globally by 2025. And we are a long way from that. You know, if we look at all the countries' pledges, up to 2030, we'll have 60 countries who have peaked emissions by 2030. And this only covers 60% of global emissions. There's a long way to go for the remaining 40%. And a lot of these countries are in the developing world. But in any case, this report says that it's not going to be enough if we're going to peak emissions by 2030. So that just shows us the scale of the problem and how far we are from achieving it. And that's really the main takeaway in my eyes.
Why has the climate situation seemed to deteriorate since the adoption of the Paris Agreement 7 years ago? Does this point to a lack of implementation on the part of member states? Or has climate change just occurred faster than expected?
So first, I just want to point out that it's not really a question of whether climate change is happening faster than expected. The more studies that are conducted and undertaken and published, then the clearer our idea of all these uncertainties. And this latest report is really a reflection of our ever-growing understanding of the problem. You know, we're almost trained to see Paris as a huge monumental achievement, but the bar is set so low. We managed to come to some sort of agreement where we said we would essentially do our best to limit warming to 2 degrees Celsius. Then later it transpired that 2 degrees Celsius would still, you know, be crazy catastrophic. So then in 2018, the IPCC published another report looking at the impacts of 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming. And even that was frightening. And then the other issue is that we aren't even meeting our Paris goals at present, you know? So we don't have in place the policies to make the changes yet. And why we don't have those policies is based on two other related issues. And these are lack of capacity and willpower, and in some cases, even lack of ownership. But there are the technological tools out there to allow us to peak emissions by 2025, for us to start reducing emissions globally by 2030. But then we run into the problems of like politics and economics. And then we got to ask ourselves some serious questions here. Like, there's going to be a transition period and things are probably going to get worse in like real economic terms when we introduce things like carbon taxes or invest heavily in renewable energy that might be a bit more expensive, a bit more intermittent, but in the long run, it's going to be worth it.
The report highlights the need for technological advancements to reduce greenhouse gases. However, what is the state of play in terms of the viability and commercial availability of such technology?
I would say it's more or less there. I mean, this report does go through in some great detail the sort of like cost reductions and viability of many low carbon technologies that are out there. Just to give you an example from Malaysia, in the last large scale solar auction that we had last year, we had offer prices cheaper than coal or very close to coal. And it was very, very similar in the previous large scale solar auction as well in 2020. But of course, with renewables, we have more structural issues like intermittency and grid compatibility, which from what I understand, there's only a certain amount of renewables that the grid can take at any one time. But this is, again, something that the regulators and operators are looking to address right now. In Malaysia as well, we could do a lot more to focus on biofuels, and in particular, in terms of figuring out ways to, like, you know, to achieve two objectives in one. We can figure out ways to clean up the image of palm oil with things like biomass and biogas, because there's a lot of potential there with like the various byproducts of palm oil production that are circular and that can lead to emissions reductions. So we need to pump more resources into all of this. And you mentioned viability and commercial availability. The thing is, if we pump enough resources, we invest enough into R&D, production, deployment of low carbon technology, we can take care of the financial and economic viability, commercial viability. It's just plain economics. It now becomes a question of willpower and being strong enough to assert that, you know, we're going to allocate this amount of funding towards low carbon industries. We're going to create industrial growth there. We're going to almost like create this new engine of economic growth that works with what we need to do with regard to climate change.
Darshan, the war in Ukraine has sent energy prices skyrocketing, and supply issues have underlined how dependent most economies still are on fossil fuels. Do you see the shift to renewable energy taking place quickly enough to avert the climate crisis? And what do you think needs to happen for this shift to take place in a major way?
The common element between Ukraine, the energy crisis, and climate change is that they're all driven by our dependence on fossil fuels. And I feel like that should tell us enough. You know, this IPCC report also showed that there are viable, established, and emerging low-carbon technologies that can make somewhat of a difference. And then, you know, like I mentioned just now, it comes down to political will and good policy. So what needs to happen? And I'm not going to sit here and bash governments for not doing enough. Like, I accept that to a degree, governments everywhere hold a big chunk of responsibility. But like I said just now, climate action has very rarely been a vote winner. People won't be happy to be told to make do with less. People won't be happy to pay more for petrol or to take a bus or train instead of driving, to pay more for cars. People won't be happy with eating vegetarian, paying high electricity bills. Like, look what happened when we implemented GST. You know, from an economic perspective, it's a good policy, but in practice, that's not how it plays out. And so the best policies to address climate change, to really push this transition, no ambitious politician is going to take up this cause in the first place. And then you have the extra complicated factor of how powerful the fossil fuel industry is and other extractive industries. And we have seen countless examples over the past few decades of how these extractive industries try to stymie environmental regulation. You know, the Ukraine crisis should have been seen as a way for countries to seriously rethink their reliance on oil and gas and fossil fuels. But instead, we see countries like the US, Canada, UK, and even Norway increasing exploration of oil and gas right now in response to the crisis. But why? Why? We should be instead focusing on renewables. We should be focusing on wind and solar, floating solar, agrivoltaic solar, batteries, biofuels, and all these things instead.
And what are the implications of the report for Malaysian climate change policy? What areas do we need to focus on in order to do our part in reducing emissions?
Okay, so I think things are getting very interesting in Malaysia. And if you compare to where we were a few years ago to where we are now, I think things are progressing. At COP26, we signed up to a couple of pledges that are quite consequential in terms of stopping deforestation and reducing methane emissions. But in my opinion, in the 12th Malaysia Plan, we have potentially some of the most impactful policy instruments that the government could introduce. And this includes carbon pricing, ecological fiscal transfers, and payments for ecosystem services. And these are huge steps in the right direction, because these policies do something totally different to the other policies that we have. They put a price on polluting. They put a price on harming nature and overexploiting natural resources. We've never had that before. You know, we could pollute the skies and the rivers. We can deforest and log because it's profitable. We can overuse electricity and water and petrol because the prices are too low. And with things like carbon pricing and EFTs, we challenge those business cases from the start if we design the instruments well. So it really, next up is a battle of political reality and political will. Would people be okay with things getting more expensive for the benefit of the climate? And what we need to understand is that Malaysia needs to implement these sorts of instruments to discourage fossil fuel use. And then what the government needs to do is use all these revenues to go all out spending on green industries, creating green jobs, boosting low carbon deployment, cleaning up the grid, investing in public transport, urban agriculture, and all these other good things. And at the same time, we also need to ramp up social protection, because while we strive to clean up, it's not going to prevent the floods and all these other consequences of climate change that we see on a very, very regular basis. This stuff is all here to stay.
Darshan, thanks very much for speaking to us this morning. That was Darshan Joshi, analyst with ICIS Malaysia, just outlining the case in terms of climate change, putting in really stark terms just the challenges that countries will have to achieve what's needed in order to avert the worst of the catastrophe. It's possible, as he said, but it will take a lot of investment and there will be pain. Do governments have the political will to do this? That's the question. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.